and welcome to the latest edition of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I am your host, writer-director Christopher R. Mim, and I have to ask, are you there? Are you listening? I hope so, because I put a lot of effort into what it is I do, including this podcast you're listening to right now. And I really hope to entertain you, if only for a little bit. So what's going on with you? You got some big holiday plans coming up? Did you have a good Thanksgiving? I did. I ate a lot. But I didn't go crazy, which I'm rather proud of myself, but I still ate myself silly. But not crazy, you know? We've entered that special time of year where families get together or friends make a point to reach out to one another and try to spread good cheer. Of course, in the world we currently live in, we need that more than ever. Although, admittedly, this time of year can sometimes be difficult for me. Mostly because I just released Demon with the Atomic Brain, which is still going strong and selling great, and people are seeming to like it. But after releasing it, I kind of went on a crazy promotional blitz that lasted about 7 weeks. I was all over the place doing lots of different events in different states, different locations, lots of screenings, and I am done now. I finally hit my last event, which was Waxacon in Waxahachie, Texas. Then Thanksgiving hit, and I am exhausted. Also, this time of year here in the far, far northern reaches of the United States, the days get very, very short. And I'm a night owl, which means that sometimes this time of year gets to me. I kind of feel a little crazy, a little seasonal affective stuff going on here, just mostly because I don't see the sun sometimes for several days. And even when I am up during the very short daylight hours, it's gray and crappy outside. So couple all that with the end of a intense promotional period for a movie I'm very proud of and I hope you've all seen and are going to tell everybody about, I'm just kind of exhausted. But that's okay. That doesn't mean I'm sitting around doing nothing. Far from it. Instead, I'm working on the next movie, which is called Guns of the Apocalypse. It's my post-apocalyptic spaghetti Midwestern. I'm about 57 pages into the script, which most of my scripts are between 70 and 80 pages, and most of my movies are 70 to 80 minutes long, so that's about right. That means I'm getting close to the end of finishing the first draft. In the past, I used to do only a single draft and then just shoot that, but I've since stopped doing that and my films have improved. It's one of those things I started doing somewhere along the way and realized that there's a reason why you should go back and fix things. Some of those early movies are pretty good, Monster Phantom Lake in particular. But again, that one I think was really good more because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Whereas these latest ones I think are better because I kind of know what I'm doing. Maybe. Anyway, so I'm working on Guns of the Apocalypse, and the script is almost done. I'd say give it a week or two, and it'll be ready to go. And we'll start really jumping into pre-production. And honestly, during these long, dark days, where I literally feel like I'm a bat living in a cave, being able to be creative and write scripts, this is actually kind of nice. In the past, when I used to release movies in the spring, this would be the time when I'd be really pumping away at finishing the edit. And so as long as I stay busy during this time and continue to be creative, it's sort of a way of just maybe like giving me a bit of an escape from the long, sad, gray existence that is Minnesota this time of year. And of course, I'm being overly dramatic because that's what I do. And honestly, though, the days do get very short and the nights do get very long. And it can be rough. But of course, that doesn't mean I have the luxury of hibernating for the next 6 months. Heck no, I got a movie to make. And it's called Guns of the Apocalypse. And I think it's going to be good. It's a bit bleak. That's the word I've chosen for this one. As you know, Where Skeeto Nazi Hunter was dark, and Demon with the Atomic Brain was fun. This one is bleak and kind of violent. But it's a Western, you know? I feel like it kind of has to be a little violent. Because all the violence is, of course, you know, people being shot. But there's no blood. It's not like a Tarantino film. I mean, I recently saw The Hateful Eight for the first time, and it's not like that at all. In fact, there will be no blood. You know, if you watch those old Westerns, they would do this thing where someone would get shot, and they just sort of put their hand over where they're supposedly been shot and then fall over. So I'm very excited. Like I said, the script is almost done. And then from there, the next step is we can start costuming it out. I have cast members in mind, but I haven't finalized anything with any of them, really, except for maybe one person. But I'm not ready to announce much, so I'm waiting. I would imagine next month we'll have all of our casting in place because, honestly, come February, we got to get moving. We got to start shooting if we're going to get this out and stick with the one movie a year schedule. We got to get moving. And that's why I'm you know, plugging away at this script. Some days it's easier than others. That's the nature of writing, I think, is sometimes you have to force yourself to do it. And if there's any advice I have for anyone out there that wants to write, sometimes you literally just have to force yourself to do it, even when you don't want to. Recently, I'd gotten a little stuck, and I wasn't quite sure on how to get characters from point A to B and then to C. There was a bit of a disconnect in my head about how to make that happen. What I ended up doing was just making myself write. And I ended up writing something and then erasing it, writing something else and erasing it. And then the next day when I got up and I was having breakfast, it hit me at that moment that if I sort of mixed the two, it was almost like finding the halfway point between the two versions I had gotten rid of. That was the way to make it work. That's just it. You got to try stuff. You got to do it. Not to sound like Shia LaBeouf, but do it. And that goes for anything. If you're out there and you're thinking about writing a novel or a play or making a movie or going out to be in a movie or whatever, go do it. Life is short. Just like the days here in Minnesota this time of year. Days are so short. So short. But seriously, just do it. Force yourself to do it. It gets easier the more you do it. It's like anything. When you first learned to ride a bike, assuming you've learned to ride a bike, you were wobbly, right? And you probably fell down a few times. Maybe you got scraped up. But you kept at it. And now I'm guessing you can ride your bike without the training wheels. But you would not have been able to do that had you not continued to practice. And you know what's another word for practicing? Do it. That didn't make a lot of sense, but I think it did. I think you understood what I'm getting at. So that's my daily motivation. Despite the soul-crushing darkness that is my existence right now. All right, I got to stop. It's really not that bad. I really don't see the sun much this time of year, and sometimes it just makes me feel like I just literally want to sleep. It just makes me tired. I just want to go to bed and then sleep. Stay warm until it gets warm again. Who has the luxury of hibernating? Bears, I suppose. However, I set a goal at the beginning of this year to take over the world, and honestly, it's December now, and I don't feel like I took over the world. I do feel the Mimiverse is in a better spot now than it was at the beginning of last year. So, hey, you know, I think I was just off by a year in the whole taking over the world thing. I just gotta wait till 2018. I got mixed up. Sometimes it happens. I thought, ooh, 2017, the year we take over the world. It's actually 2018. So stick with us. You'll be in the right place when it happens. And you'll be able to say you used to listen to the podcast way back when it only had less than a billion listeners. I imagine I would have at least a billion listeners if I actually did take over the world, wouldn't you think? All right. On that note, Guns of the Apocalypse is coming together. I do have a tentative cast list together, but I am not releasing it yet, but that will be soon. In the meantime, what you can do is contribute to the production of the film. Now is the time we need the money the most. We need to build the budget so we know exactly what we can spend and on what. how much of that script can we actually bring to life, and how many places will we have to compromise because we don't have enough money? Also, it is December. The holidays are coming at the end of this month, and those particular holidays usually involve gifts. And what better gift, what more unique gift can one be given than their name in the end credits of a movie? And a copy of that movie when it's done. And a cool certificate signed by the writer-director. Now imagine, it's whatever holiday you choose to celebrate, and this person you absolutely adore. Perhaps it's your child, your spouse. Perhaps it's that person you've had your eye on, and you know it could go somewhere. You know, you feel the chemistry between you. You're just right there, you know, and trying to get over that hump of both of you admitting how in love you are. This person could potentially be your lifelong soulmate, the one person in this entire universe literally most suited to who you are. This is the person that will look you in the eye and say, you are enough exactly as you are, and I love every part about you exactly as you are. Don't ever change, because I want you as you are. That person could be hanging out with you on this gift-giving holiday. And you two may not have taken that step of admitting that, but you're both thinking it. You know you're both thinking it. Those long, deep staring contests across the room where it seems like there's nobody else in the world but that person. You know, you're at a lunch counter, perhaps. Not that there are many lunch counters around. We'll just say, for the sake of argument, you're at a lunch counter. And your friend is sitting, and they're opening their chips. We'll say they're eating chips. Sour cream and onion. And you're waiting for your soup to arrive. You're standing at the counter, and you look across the room, and their eyes meet yours. And even though this lunch counter is very busy right now because it's lunchtime, everyone else fades away. And it's just you two. And you both know in that moment, you see each other. You know, you really see each other in a way that you don't with anyone else. And you know someday you're going to end up with this person, but you're scared. You know, this is a big thing. And especially if it turns out to be true, all of this, your entire world, your entire universe is going to change in an instant once all this is out in the open. But you haven't yet. It's whatever gift-giving holiday you two celebrate, and you're hanging out together, and you're both nervous because you've gotten each other gifts. This is the first time you've really done this, and you're like, I really want to get this person the thing that will really put it over the top, really make this happen, which it will touch them in such a way that those floodgates will open, and once those floodgates are open, there is no stopping that deluge of amazingness, that love flood that's going to happen once those gates open. So imagine you're sitting there, and you're sitting next to your friend. It's time to give this person the gift you got them. And you hand them an envelope, and they're like, what the? Did you buy me a savings bond? What is this? What are you, my grandma? Come on. But you're like, no, open it, because you're very excited, right? Now imagine the look on their face when they open that envelope, and they pull out a letter, and that letter states that you have contributed to the production of Guns of the Apocalypse in their name. And that they will be able to see their name in the end credits of a movie. And that when this movie is done, they will be receiving a copy of that film to treasure forever. And a cool signed certificate saying that it's the real deal. Now imagine the look on their face when they look you in the eyes and realize that you have immortalized their name on the IMDb. That's the moment. Imagine it. Picture the look in their eye. They will look at you in a way that you've never been looked at. And all the sound in the world will go silent. And neither of you will be able to breathe. And finally, the person will say, "This is the best gift I've ever received. You know me so well. You know me better than anyone else. I got you a blender. It's not great. We were here that one time and we were trying to crush ice to make like froofy drinks and it didn't work. So I bought you a blender. It's not as amazing as this." And you'll laugh because you kind of needed a blender. It would have been really helpful that one time when you were making the froofy drinks, right? I mean, come on. And you'll both smile. And the person will look back at you and say, "This is the greatest thing I've ever received. I'm almost speechless. Thank you so much. I don't even know what to say." And you'll say, "You don't have to say anything other than, let's totally go to the premiere together next year." And they'll be like, "Oh, yeah, let's do that. For now, though, you should open your blender and we should make some froofy drinks to celebrate this moment when you immortalized my name in the end credits of the 13th, Lucky 13, Christopher R. Mim film." They'll then ask, "Okay, so wait, really all it is right now, though, is like this letter, right?" And you'll say, "Yeah, apparently the guy who makes these movies this time of year, when people contribute to his films, he sends out a letter that you only get in December that people can use as, you know, when you're giving gifts of these contributor credits. He sends them out, which I do, by the way, so another reason to contribute." And they'll be like, "Oh, okay, cool. Let's make drinks." And you'll open the present. It's a really nice blender, maybe not the best blender, but, you know, you understand that the love of your life is maybe underemployed a little bit, perhaps, but is working toward a great promotion. And that's part of the reason they're putting up with the crap that they do at work and getting paid less than they deserve. And you know that they work harder than anyone you know. So you open this blender, and it is a nice blender. You're very grateful for this blender. You're not a jerk. It's just there was another one that had a few features that you probably would have enjoyed, but for now, this is enough, and you figure perhaps someday when we're together, that'll be our wedding present, the super blender we both really want. Either way, you're just so dang happy because you made your friend very, very happy. And so you guys get up, and you go to the kitchen, and you wash it up, and you pull out all the things you need for your froofy drinks, and you throw that ice in there, and boom, you got this great crushed ice because of this blender. And you're standing in the kitchen together, and you pour them, and you clink your glasses, you both take a drink, and it tastes great. And everything about this moment just seems so perfect. And then it's that moment. Your friend, who you're desperately in love with, puts their drink on the counter and takes your drink out of your hand and sets it next to theirs. And there's a silence for a moment, a palpable silence in the room. And they take a step forward and enter your personal space. And in the back of your head, you're like, "Just do it. Do it." Because you're kind of chicken, right? But you knew that if you just contributed to Guns of the Apocalypse at gunsoftheapocalypse.com, this might be a possibility, a distinct possibility. And they look you in the eye and they say, "You know, no one has ever cared enough to immortalize me in a movie, or at least my name in a movie." You sheepishly ask, "Do you really like it? I mean, honestly?" Your friend says, "I really do, in a way that I can't articulate. It's so amazing. Where did you do this?" And of course, don't forget you guys are totally standing in each other's personal spaces, so it's like very close and intimate. You say, "Oh, I went to this website, this SaintEuphoria.com. This guy's got a bunch of movies, and I really love them, and I support his art because I find these films really entertaining. And I was trying to find the most unique gift I could possibly give you because, I don't know, I just, you mean something to me. The corner of their mouth sort of turns up a little and says, oh, I mean something to you, do I? And you smile and say, well, yeah. And they say, oh, well, you mean something to me too. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. That was a very thoughtful present. And I'm kind of feeling warm. I mean, I'm buzzing from this. This was amazing. And I think it's quite literally the best gift I've ever been given. And that's when it happens. They kiss you. And from that moment, it is fireworks. True love. It was all made possible by your contribution to Guns of the Apocalypse, the 13th Mimiverse film coming next year. GunsOfTheApocalypse.com, or if you can't spell apocalypse, because some people can't, if you go to Saint Euphoria, which is equally difficult because of the word euphoria, which some people don't know how to spell, you can make it happen. Otherwise, go to TheGiantSpider.com and look in the drop-down list and find the Guns of the Apocalypse. And then give that gift. Imagine what could happen. This could be the rest of your life we're talking about here. And perhaps if you don't do it, you'll miss that train. Because that person may be unimpressed with your gift, so you don't end up sort of turning that corner, right? Because you get them like oven mitts because you're an idiot. And they're like, oh, these are great oven mitts. Wow. And you're really stupid because you totally left the tag on with the clearance sticker still on it. I mean, you barely spent like $5. And they're just like, God, this person is cheap. And, you know, money doesn't buy relationships, but, I mean, this is the love of your life, your soulmate, your one and only. And all you did was spend like $5 on clearance oven mitts? That day is kind of cool, but nothing happens. You don't turn that corner. You don't get over that hump, right? That the contribution to Guns of the Apocalypse could have gotten you. You don't do it. It doesn't happen because you didn't contribute. Instead, you got these stupid oven mitts, and they're cheap. I mean, they're cheap. They're thin. After about 3 months, you're going to start feeling the heat through those oven mitts. 6 months down the road, they'll have holes starting to form. If they make it to the following holiday season, they're going to be so tattered and thin that, I mean, they'll be useless and they'll have been thrown away just like you. You'll have been thrown away because they got back together with their ex. And they're sort of happy. I mean, happy enough. And then you're just too chicken to say anything because you want to be a good friend. And even though you know that they loved you as much as you love them, clearly those oven mitts didn't say that. I mean, the blender didn't really either, but it doesn't matter, right? This is about you, not them. And by the time you think about actually confessing how you feel, it's too late because they're already engaged. And what are you going to do? I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to go to GunsOfTheApocalypse.com and you're going to contribute and get your future soulmate's name in the end credits. And then you're going to receive that cool letter that I will personally send you to give to them. And you'll present that to them on that day and your life will be forever beautiful. It's all about choices. It's all about the story of your life. How do you want it to go? Which direction? What do you want? All I know is that the way you make sure that your life goes the way you want it to, you need to contribute to Guns of the Apocalypse at GunsOfTheApocalypse.com. All right. On that note, it is the holiday time. Give the gift of the Mimiverse. If you go to SaintEuphoria.com or even go to Amazon and get that free shipping. I'm sure you know someone who loves monster movies or who would probably be a fan of the films of the Mimiverse. All it takes is someone like you to invest in picking up a few things. And we have some other cool stuff right now, too. We still have the Mimiverse 2018 calendars, or at least we have a couple left. We're running out of those real quick. I'm doing a special. We currently have all of the lobby cards in stock for all 12 films. And I'm doing a special deal where you can buy all of them. That's 96 cards, 8 cards per movie, 12 movies. So 96 cards for a special price right now that saves you $90 compared to if you were to buy them all individually. And that will only last, honestly, 2 people. Of what we have left, 2 or 3 titles, we only have 2 sets left. So really, 2 people can take advantage of this particular deal. But you have to go to the December 2017 Mimiverse Monthly online newsletter to get the deal. So if you're interested, check it out. Obviously, we also have the cool 2017 holiday ornaments. This year, we have 2 of them. One is the Flying Dinner Plates of Death from Demon with the Atomic Brain, handcrafted by Mitch Gonzalez, the guy who created the full-size prop in the film, sculpted a small ornament-sized one. It's about, I'd say, a 1/5 scale. And they're really crazy nice. I mean, the man does good work. And he's personally, not only did he sculpt it, but he's personally casting them and painting them and signing them. So these are limited edition, hand-numbered collectibles. And after this holiday season, literally, they will never be available again. So in addition, we also have the Steve stuffed ornament. That is the companion piece to last year's The Monster Phantom Lake ornament, made by Stephanie Mim. They're cute. Little Steve heads hanging on your tree. Everyone loves Steve. Ignore me, follow Steve, right? Come on. And again, these are limited to only this time of year. They won't be available after the holidays, unless we have a few extras, which we did last year with the Monster Phantom Lake, but those sold very quickly once people realized I still had some left. So we might have more, we might not. It's a limited number. We only make 25 and that's it, we cut it off. And already we've sold, I think, 15 of them, and it's only been available for a week. Otherwise, we got the movies, we got the posters, we have contributor credits, which I don't know if you've heard much about that, but we have those. If you want to make sure everything arrives in time for the holidays, order quickly. I promise you that every order I get, I will fill literally as fast as I possibly can. Often, they'll end up in the mail the next day. Sometimes the same day. I've had people where I'll get up and find that someone at, 6 a.m. ordered something. It'll be in the mail before the end of that day. And if you're close to Minnesota, that means you might get it the next day. But even with standard postal rates, it's never more than 2 or 3 days. So do it. Order soon, order lots, and have a happy holidays from me and all of us at the Mimiverse. We have some other cool stuff coming up for this show. We have a special pasta primer from Derek M. Cook of Monster Kid Radio at monsterkidradio.net. What a pasta primer is and what the heck that means, you'll just have to listen. He does a very good job of explaining it, and it's a great little segment. After that, we have Rich Chamberlain, the Monster Movie Kid, with another edition of the Kansas City Crypt. And then, of course, when we come back from that, we'll have Chapter 9 of For Your Eyes Only, the ongoing serial that I'm currently writing about world-renowned curler/international spy Beef McCormick. After that, of course, we'll have another great joke from Dr. Bob Tesla of Midnight Monster Movies with Dr. Bob. And then, yeah.
Okay, here's the deal, gang. You know I love my monster movies. A big part of who I am is wrapped up in the classic and sometimes not so classic genre cinema of yesteryear. I love them. Rubber-suited monsters, bats on strings, luchadors fighting papier-mâché Frankenstein monsters with Fu Manchu mustaches, black-and-white spookfest from Universal, colorful gothics from Hammer Films, everything in between and around them all. I love them. But here's the thing. As much as my love for Creature from the Black Lagoon, The Black Scorpion, Rodan, Island of Terror, and Taste the Blood of Dracula courses through my veins and is written upon my very DNA, I do like and even study some other films. Other genres and subgenres do call to me as well. And when Christopher R. Mim finally pulled the six-gun trigger on announcing that he'll be making a Western, or, well, excuse me, making a post-apocalyptic spaghetti Midwestern, the part of my cinema-loving soul that loves spaghetti Westerns screamed out in anticipation and joy. Now, of course, his upcoming movie, Guns of the Apocalypse, which you should donate to, isn't going to be a traditional spaghetti Western, by the strictest definition. It really can't be, and we'll get to that. Besides, as we've learned through watching Chris's other movies, everything he produces gets a pass through his unique B-movie-loving filter. And that's awesome. I love Chris's take on the giant monster movie, the haunted house movie, the creature in the lake movie, and I love that he's expanding and creating movies that don't just make use of our beloved B-movie formulas, but adds to them. It's wonderful, and I'm eager to see what he's going to do with Guns of the Apocalypse, and have I mentioned you should donate to that. This is all very nice timing for me, really, as I've been thinking about spaghetti Westerns a lot lately, and hopefully, throughout this series, you will be too. Consider this your pasta primer. So let's talk definitions for a moment. Where does the term spaghetti Western come from? Well, if you ask my wife, she originally thought it was because these films had shots in which the camera was placed on the ground behind a gunslinger, the scene framed by the cowboy's legs, making them look long, like pieces of spaghetti. Okay, my wife's adorable. Seriously though, spaghetti Western is a term used to describe a Western usually from the 60s filmed in Italy, hence spaghetti. Now, in my reading over the years, I found that at one point the term spaghetti Western actually offended some folks, so the more respectful term Euro-Western was bandied about. These days, I don't know if it's as offensive or not, as I see the term spaghetti Western used all over the place now, and that's what we're going to use through this Pasta Primer series. Now, as a side note, Italy was not the only non-US place making Westerns. You had, and I'm not making up these terms, sauerkraut Westerns in Germany, curry Westerns in India, and so on. Also, the Western wasn't the only genre the Italians were taking inspiration from when looking at what's sold in the American market. For example, the war film was a popular genre too, and the Italians made movies in this genre, and they became known as macaroni combat pictures. Okay, back to spaghetti Westerns. When the movies first started being released, they were just Westerns, which makes it really hard to pinpoint what the first spaghetti Western movie was. Now, in Italy, Westerns were being produced as early as 1913 with a silent movie called La Vampira Indiana, which translates to Indian Vampire. And it was directed by Vincenzo Leone, which is a name we'll come back to here in a little bit. And no, I haven't seen La Vampira Indiana, but man, I really want to, and I hope I can find it somewhere online. Now, some sources cite a 1961 film called Tierra Brutale as the first traditional spaghetti Western, and I probably butchered the Italian pronunciation of that. It was released here in the U.S. with the much more pronounceable by me title, The Savage Guns. It was a co-production between the Spanish and the British. While I don't know if we can really be sure it was the first, I like the idea of The Savage Guns being the first spaghetti Western, because this movie also has some horror genre connections. First, it was directed by Michael Carreras, who was the son of James Carreras, one of the founders of Hammer Films. Michael Carreras steered the direction of Hammer in the 60s and 70s and even directed a few Hammer films himself, including 1968's The Lost Continent, which is the film that Scott Morris and I are covering on the new episode of 1951 Down Place, the Hammer Films podcast that's been on a way too long hiatus and is now back. You can check it out at 1951downplace.com.
Here, where a million years are but a moment. Here, where the present and the past tremble in the presence of the prehistoric. From here comes an adventure so big that only the big screen can do it justice.
What is it?
The Lost Continent, discovered in all its monstrous horror.
Now, the other genre connection in The Savage Guns is actor Alex Nichol. He plays Danny in the Western, but we monster kids? We probably know him best as Mickey in 1958's The Screaming Skull.
Listen, if you can imagine the furor of love, then maybe you'll hear these walls here, these windows answer. Screaming Skull. The Screaming Skull is a motion picture magnificent in its horror. Therefore, this certificate assures burial service without cost to anyone in the audience who dies of fright.
The heyday of the Spaghetti Western was really in the 60s and 70s, and perhaps the best known is, and you can probably actually already hear the music in your head right now, 1966's The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, which is the third film in a trilogy of movies that also includes 1964's A Fistful of Dollars and 1965's For a Few Dollars More. All three of these films were directed by the son of Vincenzo, Sergio Leone.
The good. The bad. The ugly.
Now make no mistake, these are great films. There's a reason why they're considered iconic. Ennio Morricone's music alone makes these movies stand out. But there's also the direction, the performances, and the performances. And hey, you know, there's another genre connection. Clint Eastwood, he's the lead in these films. And of course, you know that I know that you probably know that Eastwood's first film appearance was 1955's Revenge of the Creature, the second Creature from a Black Lagoon movie. Now, these movies, the Man with No Name trilogy, are just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what the spaghetti western genre has to offer. There's movies like Arizona Colt, They Call Me Trinity, The Big Gun Down, Any Gun Can Play, Massacre Time, and perhaps my favorite title for a spaghetti western, God Made Them, I Kill Them. And then, of course, there's a Django from 1966, directed by another Sergio Corbucci. And, you know, actually, as a side note, there was actually a third Sergio Sollima. He directed the aforementioned The Big Gun Down, which was also released in 1966. These three Sergios are considered the three most famous Italian Western directors, according to the Spaghetti Western database website. Now, Django is another one of those iconic movies, and like A Fistful of Dollars, it also takes, well, at least some of its inspiration from Akira Kurosawa's 1961 film, Yojimbo. Now, some reports state that Django inspired hundreds of sequels. It's kind of hard to tell. You see, Django just became one of those pop culture characters, and a lot of times, the name Django would appear on a movie poster or in a film title, and that was it. The character may not even show up in the movie, or if he did, he's played by somebody else, or he has completely different characteristics. Now, the original Django was played by Franco Nero, who also played Django in the only quote-unquote official sequel, 1987's Django Strikes Again, also known as Django 2, The Great Return, also directed by Corbucci. Nero also has a cameo in Quentin Tarantino's 2012 Django, and there's been talk of another quote-unquote official sequel to Django and Django 2, starring Franco Nero. It's been in talks for a while. Don't know if it's actually going to happen, but it'd be kind of cool if it did. Now, whether it's Django, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, or any of these other readily available spaghetti westerns, I'd highly, highly recommend them. These days, it is getting easier and easier to see some of these films. If you have Amazon Prime, a ton of them are available for streaming. The filmmaking techniques on display in these movies are inspiring. Sure, a lot of these movies are violent, but like the Trinity films, there's also some comedic movies, and really, Any Gun Can Play, I mentioned that a second ago. This movie has it all. The comedy, the acrobatics, the gunplay, the violence. It's a really good film. Check it out. Or any of these spaghetti westerns. Just keep in mind, they are a product of their time and place, so they don't always display the best portrayal of women or minorities. That said, I wouldn't just write any of these movies off, like I did up through the mid-90s. But I'll talk about that next time. Special thanks to the band El Diablitos. They're a spaghetti western surf rock band based here in Portland, Oregon, and they gave me permission to use their music for the Pasta Primer series. The song you're hearing is La Danza de los Muertos, which is the third track on the album All Roads Lead to Hell. You can find them on Bandcamp at eldiablitos.bandcamp.com. That's eldiablitos.bandcamp.com. Check them out and let them know that you heard about them here on this podcast. My name is Derek M. Cook, and typically, I'm the guy that talks about monster movies. And you can hear that every week at Monster Kid Radio over at monsterkidradio.com. Net. Thanks to Chris for letting me shift gears a little bit and talk about another film passion of mine here on the podcast. And by the way, did you know he's making a movie called Guns of the Apocalypse? You can donate now.
this is Rich Chamberlain. The door is open. Step on in to the Kansas City Crypt for this special holiday edition. Now, if you're like me, you don't watch as many science fiction or horror films this time of year because you're filling your calendar of events with a lot of family time as well, a lot more festive viewing. I love a good Bing Crosby musical, and so I'll be watching White Christmas and Holiday Inn as I always do every year. And I have no qualms about admitting that I will watch Rudolph and Frosty and all those other Rankin-Bass specials year after year. I'm a big kid at heart. But I always make time for at least a few horror films to kind of get me through the holiday season. In recent years, we've actually had some really good ones like Krampus or A Christmas Horror Story. You can go a little farther back. Black Christmas, I think, is one of the best horror films of all time, in my personal opinion. I'm talking about the original version with John Saxon and Margot Kidder. Now, we've also had some stinkers along the way, but there's definitely some good foreign films like Saint Nick or Rare Exports is really good. Definitely high recommendations on those. Now, if you take a left at Albuquerque, there's a bit more bizarre part of the Christmas-themed movies. That's where you'll find Santa Claus Conquers the Martian or The Magic Christmas Tree. Boy, that one's a trip. Of course, there's the classic 1959 Mexican horror flick, and yes, I think you can call it a horror flick. It's simply called Santa Claus. Basically, it's Santa versus the devil. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. That one is bizarre. But I'll watch it just about every 2 or 3 years. Now, there's maybe even more bizarre corner. That's where films like, our good friends up north gave us The Christmas Martian. And I'm still trying to find out who's responsible for Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny. Good God. Okay. I will say this. There is a definitive... one of the best ghost stories of all time that's Christmas-themed and is part of my annual viewing every year. Multiple versions, as a matter of fact. Yes, I'm talking about A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. There have been adaptations going all the way back to the silent era, and I've seen most of those silent era films. They're not bad. They're kind of oddities, really. Most of the time, they're rather abbreviated. There's a lot that left out, but it's kind of fun to see them. You get into the sound era, and you get a few more that are, some are better than others. One of the earliest, and I think it may be the earliest sound film, is called Scrooge from 1935, starring Seymour Hicks. Now, he plays a good Scrooge, but the problem is that at the end of the movie, I guess here's a spoiler alert in case you've been living under a rock, when Scrooge kind of has a new look on life, and he's supposed to be a much cheerier version of himself, I don't think that Seymour Hicks pulls it off. He still looks rather grumpy and curmudgeonly to me. I don't know. He does a good Scrooge, but he does a better grumpy Scrooge. 3 years later, there was MGM's version of A Christmas Carol with Reginald Owen. Now, this one is not one of my favorites. I know there's a lot of people out there who love this version, but for me, I don't know. It's a little short. There is some key scenes that have been taken out or certain things that have been re-edited. But I also am not really fond of Reginald Owen. Here's a bit of trivia. Did you know that Lionel Barrymore was originally supposed to star in that film? The reason he didn't? Well, he was beginning to have leg and back problems. When you watch him in It's a Wonderful Life, where, of course, he's Old Man Potter in a wheelchair, understand that that was actually written into the script so that he didn't have to stand. I'm not even sure if he was really standing at that point. There's a film in the late 1930s where he's actually using crutches to move around, and again, that was kind of written into the film. By the time It's a Wonderful Life came around, I'm pretty sure he was wheelchair-bound at that point full-time. But in 1938, at the onslaught of his problems, he was cast to play Scrooge. He had been playing it on radio for years, and he would have been wonderful. But, unfortunately, he had to step down. I mean, he really stepped down because he didn't even do his radio adaptation that year. It was done by, I think they were called the Campbell Playhouse at that point, the Mercury Theater Players, Orson Welles. Actually, Orson Welles played the part of Scrooge that year, substituting for Lionel Barrymore. And Lionel Barrymore did do kind of a filmed trailer of sorts for it. But, I commend him for what he did, but Reginald Owen, it's just not Scrooge for me. Now, Lionel Barrymore did do the radio adaptations well into the 1940s. I think it was literally the year right before his death. I highly, highly recommend you take a listen to the 1939 Campbell Playhouse edition. It's easily found on YouTube. It's public domain. Listen to it. It is, in my opinion, the best radio adaptation you will find out there of Scrooge. Lionel Barrymore is amazing in that role. And, you know, you get the rest of the Mercury Theater players, Orson Welles, and they put on a good show. Definitely a lot of fun. Track that one down. When it comes to film adaptations, as I said, there's been so many different versions over the years. But for me, there's two that always stand out. At the start of the holiday season, I will always watch the 1999 version with Patrick Stewart. This one, for me, I just have an affinity for it because, well, for one thing, Jimmy, you know, I mean, you're talking about Patrick Stewart, and I think he's just simply amazing in it. Not the best Scrooge, there's better, but I like Patrick Stewart's portrayal in this film. He had been doing a one-man stage play of Scrooge, so he certainly knew the part very well, and I think he did a great adaptation. He's surrounded by a lot of great supporting cast, and I think it's a great production, and it's certainly well worth tracking down. And for me, that's the start of my holiday season. And my holiday season always ends on Christmas Eve with an annual viewing of the 1951 version starring Alistair Sim. I think he is the definitive Scrooge. And from what I can tell, there's a lot of people out there who agree with me. It doesn't get any better than that particular version. I have fond memories of watching it as a kid, as far back as I can remember. And it's a little bit, you might not know, this one's a little harder to find. But he actually came back, and I think it was in 1970 or 71, he did a... there was an animated version. It runs about 25 minutes long, and it actually was released theatrically, and I believe may have won some awards for being a short animated film of the year, and then became a television special. Alistair Sim comes back and does the voice of Scrooge. It's beautiful animation and something that I highly recommend you track down as well. No matter what you watch this time of year, there's plenty of choices. We can still be festive and yet still dip our toes into the creepy and weird. From everyone here at the Kansas City Crypt, I wish you and yours a very happy holiday season, and I look forward to what awaits us in 2018, both here in the Crypt and in the larger, wider Mimiverse. It's going to be a fantastic year. Until then, everyone, take care and happy holidays.
Thank you, Derek, and thank you, Rich. And now is the part you've probably all been waiting for or skipped right ahead to, For Your Eyes Only, Chapter 9. A quick recap of what was happening. Of course, last month was a Ivan Bentonoff chapter, but the month before that, Beef McCormick and Ingrid woke up after being tranquilized in a warehouse and found out some very interesting information about the Russians and the now separate factions of Russians working against each other, and then all hell broke loose and a bunch of people got shot. This takes place after that. And it goes something like this. Back in the dingy warehouse, Beef McCormick's head felt full of cotton, the tranquilizer's haze still buzzing through his bloodstream. Ingrid, a bullet lodged in her arm, lay whimpering on the ground, a drip-drop of blood from the wound forming a small pool on the greasy floor. Beef knelt protectively in front of her and pointed the Russian assault rifle in his hands at the three armed strangers standing in front of him. The man in the middle, the doctor who treated Beef as he emerged from sedation, cautiously stepped forward. Beef visibly tightened his grip on his weapon. His voice as cold as a curling sheet, he snarled, "Don't you dare take another step." The man stopped short and raised his hands in surrender before deliberately crouching to place his pistol at his feet. Returning to a standing position, he gently kicked the weapon toward Beef, the gun audibly scraping across the concrete before skidding to a halt a few inches from Beef's toes. The two other men slowly lowered their high-powered weapons. Beef couldn't help but feel confused. The doctor's tone remained calm and level. You can put your weapon down now, Mr. McCormick. Why should I? I have no idea who you are. Like you, Beef. May I call you Beef? No. Understood. Like you, Mr. McCormick, we work for the American government. I don't believe you. It does not matter if you do or do not. The truth of the matter is, we do. What agency? Come now, Mr. McCormick. You and I both know if I told you that, I'd have to kill you. The smarmy smile plastered on the man's face made it apparent he was pleased with his attempt at humor. Beef was decidedly untickled. You shot Ingrid. Yes, we did. But it was necessary. She's a loyal asset. No. Your little girlfriend? She's a double agent. And that bullet was not intended for her arm. Stunned, Beef's mind reeled. Could the woman he so thoroughly adored really be working both sides? Could she have been lying to him this whole time and only using him as a means to a traitorous end? In Beef's drug-induced, semi-incoherent state of mind, the prospect was staggering. Regrettably, Beef had to admit that, given the nature of his particular line of work, it was possible. Worse yet, the accusation alone was sufficient to introduce the tiniest shred of doubt into Beef's psyche, thus giving rise to an incongruous dissonance between his head and heart. The slight twitch of Beef McCormick's left eyelid gave the doctor every indication he needed to know his words had made an impression. I'm sorry, Mr. McCormick. I hate to have been the one to tell you, but we need to take you both in for debriefing. So, if you would, please lower your weapon. Growing increasingly disturbed, though not in any way detectable to the three iffy G-men, Beef pored over the years he'd been with Ingrid. From the moment he first got lost in her twinkling, pale blue gaze, through every earth-shattering kiss and up to the genuine fear he felt as she lay helpless and wounded on the warehouse floor, Beef simply could not wrap his brain around it. In his gut, he knew she was loyal. Then again, being a Swedish national, her allegiance to the United States was not guaranteed. However, Sweden being a free and open society, even if her patriotism was sworn to another flag, it certainly wouldn't be to the destructive societal cancer that is communism, especially of the Soviet variety. Something about this feels off, Beef thought. Too much has happened, and so little of it seems to make complete sense. Then again, maybe I'm too close to her to be able to trust myself. Could my emotions have clouded my judgment about her all along? Have I fallen for one of the oldest, most basic spy tricks in the book? Could Ingrid be some sort of modern-day Mata Hari? Mr. McCormick. The sound of the doctor's voice shook Beef from his reverie. Please lower your weapon. Beef had to pause to reorient himself. Feeling unsure, Beef relaxed his steely grip on the assault rifle and let the barrel slip toward the floor. In a legitimate state of shock, he turned his head toward Ingrid. Even sprawled out in such a vulnerable position, he found himself in awe of her exquisite beauty. Despite this new environment of uncertainty, he had no doubts regarding how completely he was in love with her. Regardless, he knew that if she was working for the enemy, she would have to pay the price, and he couldn't stand in the way. Luckily, the utter despair Beef felt, imagining the love of his life being executed for treason, quickly dissolved as the man wielding the machine gun moved to take advantage of Beef McCormick's momentary distraction. Like an Old West showdown, Beef drew faster, spraying a multitude of screaming bullets into the three men across the room. The machine gunner managed to rattle off no more than two wildly off-target rounds before he, the doctor, and the sniper all lifelessly collapsed. As the booming gunshots echoed into infinity, Beef was left with only a dull ringing in his ears and the sound of his ragged breath. Mr. McCormick. Ingrid's voice was thin and inflected with tears. Setting his rifle down, Beef turned to comfort his beloved. Staring deep into her eyes, he reassured her. Sweetheart, it's all right. You didn't have to shoot them. Yes, I did. The one with the machine gun was going to kill us both. How do you know? I always know. Beef's sly smirk put Ingrid at ease, and, for a split second, she forgot about the gnawing ache in her triceps, until she tried to move it. Immediate, searing pain radiated intensely throughout her arm and shoulder. Her grimace was almost more than Beef could take, but, being a real man's man, he refused to let it show. Easy, baby, take it easy. It hurts, Ingrid moaned. It hurts so badly, Beef. the significance of Ingrid using his first name was not lost on Beef McCormick. I know. I promise you it's going to be okay. I don't know. I feel dizzy. Stay with me, gorgeous. I don't know if I can. Ingrid's eyelids fluttered intermittently, her lenses losing the ability to focus. The strikingly unfamiliar itch of panic spreading throughout Beef's diaphragm made it hard for him to catch his breath. Hey, remember that time in Toronto? The abrupt change of subject was enough to snap Ingrid back to reality. Toronto? She managed. Yeah, after that big bond spiel, my squad against yours? Just for fun? The corner of Ingrid's mouth bent upward at the memory. Just for fun. Right, just for fun. That's what you kept saying to me. Just for fun. I had to keep saying it after we destroyed you. Your boys could hardly stand losing to a bunch of girls. Right. Exactly. Just for fun. I still can't believe you missed that final draw. You could have tied it up and sent us into an extra end. But I came up light. You came up light. I blame the sweepers. I always blame the sweepers. The rest of them always blame the skips. As well they should. Ingrid being as accomplished a curling team skip as Beef, he knew she was ultimately right. A curling team is only as good as its skip, and no team will ever succeed with a skip who can't deliver when called upon to make the important shots. Beef found himself yet again lost in the heavenly azure of Ingrid's eyes. He watched as a tear rolled down her soft alabaster cheek, its silent, lonely journey precipitating a tsunami of emotions beneath Beef's manly exterior. Gently, he wiped it away with the back of his index finger. Ingrid. Weakness began to worm its way through Ingrid's veins, and she clearly had to struggle to speak. Beef. I. Yes, my darling. I. They were right. They who? Who was right? Right about what? I am a double agent. As her literal lifeblood continued to drain from the large hole in her upper arm, Ingrid lost consciousness. Unable, or potentially unwilling, to fully comprehend Ingrid's last words, Beef McCormick's heart metaphorically exploded. And that's it for Chapter 9 of For Your Eyes Only. Join us next month for Chapter 10. I hope you have a happy and safe holiday season. I hope you get everything you asked for. And I hope to have your name in the end credits of Guns of the Apocalypse. Go to SaintEuphoria.com and hook that up. Don't forget, as I always say, be good. But if you can't do that, be good at it. Happy holidays. I'll talk to you again next month.
It is I, Dr. Bob Tesla, with your Mimiverse Joke of the Month. This month's joke comes from horror novelist Stephen King. A drummer is tired of people saying he's not a real musician, so he goes to the music store and he says to the clerk, "I'll show them. Give me that red trumpet and that accordion." And the music clerk says, "Well, you can have the fire extinguisher now, but the radiator has to stay." Tune in to our weekly show Friday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time in virtual reality on AltSpace VR. We will be starting for December, Vampire Chicks from Outer Space. And then at the end of the month, we will be having Christopher R. Mims' House of Ghosts. Check us out at www.midnightmonstermovies.com. Like us on Facebook or subscribe to us on YouTube or both. Hey, it doesn't cost you anything. So there you go. Until next month, science!